This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Everyone holding hands!
When I go home late at night, this is a song that I really like to sing right now, so I'll play it for you. It's called My Old Man.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of MyOldManSaid.com, which started off in the Premier League and now it has returned. Well, we've always been a Premier League podcast. It's just been about a championship team, but now we can talk about a Premier League team. Joining me to celebrate, Mr. Dan Rogers from the Villa Underground. Welcome back.
Hello.
And Mr. Chris Budd.
We've done it. We're back. Hello.
We've already spoken about this, Chris, so why are you saying that again?
we did
an extra patron podcast, so Chris is still elated that we're back. We're still celebrating it. So many things have tried to stop us getting out this podcast. First of all, Dan's mic blew up.
And tequila stopped me. My mic catching fire was one thing, but tequila has dissolved me like a slug.
Since then, we've got a new mic. Also, my internet went out, which I still haven't got back. That is the mission of the next few days. But we are surviving on one of those expensive 4G Wi-Fi hubs. And then Frank Lampard couldn't stop us.
No stopping us. Frank Lampard's derby.
On this show, we will be obviously looking back. We'll have a quick chat about our own personal experiences, what it's like to be back in the Premier League. What does it mean?
Means everything.
In context,
means everything to me.
We will have a quick 3 points as well, because there has been other things happening in the rest of the world of football. We will have a Scott Hogan touch count. Yes, there's always a Scott Hogan touch count, because I'll always find an angle to cram it into the show. And then we'll get into detail about the playoff final and look at the permutations, the ramifications of what's going to happen in terms of Dean Smith's squad building and also what our Premier League prospects are as we stand at the moment. So did you all have a good day, gents?
I had a cracking day for once at Wembley.
Is that that's the first time you've seen Villa win at the new Wembley? Am I right in saying?
It is. First time I've seen a score in open play since 1996.
Jesus. 20 million years ago, we did the classic. We were at Moore Street very early. I think I was on the train behind you, Chris.
We were trying to rendezvous and we fucked it up. But never mind.
Well, I fucked it up because I thought it'd be a good idea. What everybody needs with their breakfast is gin. And that was the start of my downfall for the day. I thought, well, you know, settle the stomach. And
are you trying to make out you're a bit of a lad, Dan Rogers?
Yeah, I'm a proper lad. And I fully ladded it out, because what all lads do is they then go, yeah, I'm going to have some dark fruit, which is the drink of all champion lads. And then I staggered my way to a...
Hold on a minute. Did you see any My Old Man Said podcast stickers around Moore Street?
I did. I saw the sticker at Moore Street. I understand that there was some anti-sticker painting in around the vicinity of Wembley that prohibited stickering.
I mean, we're jumping the gun. We're still in Moore Street at the moment, but...
Okay.
Fast forward to Wembley Way, where it is traditional to stick one stickers on the lampposts of Wembley Way to take nice photos with Wembley Stadium in the background. But now they have this kind of force field paint that just spits your sticker straight back at you. It's I was quite taken back by
the same stuff painted onto all your Nylon's gloves.
It's the advances in technology are amazing, but yeah, I don't know why Nylon's painting his gloves with that stuff.
Naffing sticks.
So where did you go at Wembley
when you got there? I found myself at the lovely bit of atmosphere at the liquor station, and I took in said liquor. And the game, I took my seat in Wembley, and I'm an advocate of Wembley. I think it's a great viewing stadium. But I was uber relaxed, and I attribute that to a fair amount of tequila and Sambuca. Premature celebrations, maybe, but I was proven right on 90 minutes.
Liquor station, where's that?
Outside somewhere, David. Do I have to be? It was
Dan's trying to retrace his steps like Hansel and Gretel at the moment. It's not going well.
Listen, as you guys know, I had to catch a flight the next day, and it was the hardest, most difficult. That was another 90-minute flight, and that was a harder experience to try and sit still.
If you're listening to this podcast and you didn't go to Wembley, you are none the wiser what actually went on before the game. So I'll fill in some details, shall I, Dan Rogers?
Go for it.
Well, the first thing I did, I got picked up and we drove down. It was. I think we got there about an hour and a half from Birmingham. It was like fast tracking. There was no traffic. But every time you drive to Wembley, you will without fail see a car on the side of the road with two or three people wearing Villa shirts or whatever your team is, standing there waiting for the AA. That happened again. But yeah, we started off... at the green with a few cans, but then the atmosphere was pretty good there, and it just built and built and built. There was this Derby coach incident, which I'm sure you've read about, where the windows were put through on the Derby coach.
Yeah, it's pretty embarrassing.
But I've contacted the police about this and the coach company, and despite this happening last season, nobody seems to have contacted the coach companies and said, anybody who's got a Derby coach, do not drive it through a few thousand Aston Villa fans. It's like, if it's an asteroid field, you don't fly straight into it. If you want to avoid getting hit by an asteroid, you fly around it. Unless it's the Millennium Falcon. But even they took a little bit of collateral damage. So they were none the wiser, and the coach company said, we'll be adding it onto our list of, places not to go. I think they've only been running coaches to Wembley for about three to four years, from what they were telling me. But when there was that fundraiser, which was a great idea to switch the narrative from Villa fans being a bunch of arseholes to good people, because at the end of the day it's only a few idiots throwing the bottles. But initially I think it was set up to refund the coach, and you're just thinking, well, actually if you're going to ride a coach through you're kind of asking for it. If you through a load of drunk football fans, you're kind of asking for it. And also it doesn't excuse it, and it's two separate things. You shouldn't throw things at coaches, full stop. But if I was on that coach and my kids were on that coach, and something serious happened, I'd be going for a duty of care against the coach.
Why are we driving in front of the opposition fans?
I would be suing them. So that was a bit of a strange one, and hopefully it won't happen again. I mean, there's always, as Manchester City fans throwing bottles at Liverpool coaches, Liverpool fans throwing them at Man City, West Ham, Manchester United, Barrow, York City. I mean, it's been going on for years. It's just common knowledge. You don't drive an opposition coach, whether it's players or supporters, through thousands of the opposition fans. I think my Wembley really kicked off, after a few drinks around the green. We went into in Wembley about 12:30 because, as I think I mentioned before, I was invited by the Football Supporters Federation, and I got a couple of
prawn sandwiches,
extra invites. No, it was roast beef, actually. And I got a family member in, and also Liam from Australia flew in. So we got him in. Well, he's a patron. Mm. And also used to write for My Old Man Said. And the first thing we saw when we met him outside was Dr. Tony and his posse struggling to get in. There was two young girls obviously working the gates, checking the tickets, and they were flashing some A4 pieces of paper, and they were just going, sorry, sir. So young Ho was Dr. Tony's former assistant, was on the phone frantically. If you check out my Instagram.com, My Old Man Said, the Instagram page for some various Wembley shenanigans. But no, that was quite funny. I mean, that was a good icebreaker for meeting Liam. I mean, we were pissing ourselves for a good half an hour after that.
Now it's time for Twitter with Tony. Here you go, lass. Here you go, lass. Here's my ticket. Quick, get me in. Fucking Big Keith's coming. Big Keith's coming. He's got... there's some chaps from HMRC. Quick, get me in, love. I'm big time Tony. I mean, I can't bring my rent boy in. Let me in. Let me in. Why's that chuffing David Michael taking photos of me? Fucking sit on him, Keith. May 27th. 3 years ago, that game, this picture. I made the decision to scarify for this beloved club. Maybe it's delayed. I kept my promise. May 28th. You can see through one's deepest dark in the human nature. Snake emoji. Especially in Lowest and Highest, dot. OTV. HMRC. Keith, does anybody chuffing know what chuffing mean on these fucking tweets?
And then it was into the Bobby Moore for loads of pale ales, some food, and then we checked out our seats, and you bang in the middle, right behind the Villa bench, and it was perfect. I mean, the whole hospitality thing, it's like, whatever. It's like a wedding reception at the end of the day. It's basically just a...
That's a great way to describe it. I like that.
Well, it is. We're just there to get some beers down. And half time, Villa score, you're thinking, right, beautiful, I'm going to toast this with a beer. And they're just offering you fruit juice and Ribena and tea, coffee and biscuits.
I needed a Ribena. What I'd have done for a Ribena at that point. I was drinking the sweat off the head of the man in front of me. Any fluid.
Yeah, no, but I mean, then it was a paid bar after, so it's not what it's all cracked up.
Not the best wedding reception.
No, exactly. No. It's pretty much like going to a wedding where they'll have a little small tab behind the bar at the start, and then it's like dip into your pockets. But no, it was. I mean, at the end, there was. I mean, Mings and Courtney House and Horahan were all there with their families, and Horahan spent a good 40 minutes having portraits with his baby. I think we mentioned the newborns in a previous podcast, but Codger was trying to get his little kid, when the players went and got the trophy and they were coming down, Codger was trying to get his little baby to take on the pitch, but they refused to let him on. It's obviously stricter baby laws than at Villa Park, where it's where anybody can get on. And after we went to the box park, met Mr. Bud,
where it was rocking,
and we carried on. A few of the other mad few joined up. Christoph from Norway joined us, and we bumped into some of our listeners actually, who had a few drinks with, and they were very good actually. Although there's one guy who Paul, who was with me, went to the toilets. He's a Forest fan, and he came out with this guy and directed him in my direction. And this guy said, "Oh, I recognise your voice. I recognise your voice. Oh, you do that podcast?" And he said, "You have a beautiful voice. You have a beautiful voice." And I was like, "What the hell are you talking about?" And he says, "I don't care if you know, even if your opinions are fucking shit, it doesn't matter. You just have a beautiful voice." And I'm like, okay, security. Security. And then we went on to the Hilton, where the players were actually staying there, which was normally the old traditional. I always remember, like, as a kid, FA Cup, there'd be the coaches riding in from, you know, some, they'll be shacked up in some country manor or something, riding in, and there'll be a camera and a helicopter, you know, flying over the top. You know, it's typical BBC coverage. But
they were literally just across the way, weren't they?
Yeah, Dean Smith decided that he didn't want to waste any time doing that, and they were just across the way. So a lot of Villa fans got to party with them after the game, which was an extra bit of fun.
And party they did, from the sounds
of it.
Indeed us. Anything to add, Mr. Bud?
Do you know what? It was a pretty smooth day. The travel all went well. I know me and Dan went from Moore Street expecting it to be chaos, and it was a piece of piss. It was great. Thoroughly impressed by the Box Park, which was rocking before the game, rocking after the game. All good. Sat in Club Wembley, happy days, all good.
That's a potential blueprint for, I think Manchester United had something similar at Old Trafford.
It's a great setup, isn't it? You know, you've got really good food, the bar's easy to get to, you don't have to wait very long. Massive. Yeah. Music's really good. It's just, and it's so close to the ground. It's great, you know. And then we walked up to the green, and then up to the Green Man, and ended up going back to the Box Park because it was just the Green Man in comparison. It's just, you know, it's like the go-to place, but actually it's shit.
Yeah, it looks dated, doesn't it now?
It's rubbish, and you can't get near the bar. You can't get anywhere for a piss. It's just like,
no,
people just
good.
Go there. It's like a place you go to because of folklore, whereas actually Box Park have nailed it.
Mm.
Everything you could want for pre-match. So, no, we had a great day.
Yeah, no, I worked out, actually, if I don't go to the Green Man, Villa win at Wembley.
There you go.
It's going to stay
that way.
That's
why I got the train down.
It's quite simple.
Yeah, all these superstitions, that one formed because I remembered I didn't go there for the Liverpool game, but I went for the other games.
I woke up the following day and I now attribute all of our future successes to the Austin Lions Club, because I woke up with their badge on me. I have no idea how I came to have this badge. So,
yeehaw.
Austin Lions, it was great meeting you. If I did indeed meet you.
Or if I robbed your badge, sorry.
Yeah, if I took anyone's badge on the day. Dreadfully sorry.
But the only disappointment of my time, the only missing link at Wembley in terms of when I look back, was there was no Dan Rogers at midnight on Wembley Way with myself and some of the mad few who listened to the show all joined in a rendition of Savo's song. The leader, the man who it reintroduced it to the universe, was not there, and we had to go alone without you.
Boom, boom, boom.
I got a call at literally 10 seconds after the final whistle, and I didn't know who it was. It was like number not disclosed. So I thought, fuck that.
Probably me.
Carried on celebrating, and then it rang again, and then there was a text, and it was Five Live saying, "Oh, can we talk to you about Villa?" And you're just thinking,
fuck
Jesus
off.
Christ, you know, fuck off.
You haven't been interested in 3 years, you bastards.
I am in no fit state to talk.
That was my first reaction, but it's like, just, you know, the final whistle has only literally gone, you know, less than a minute ago, and it's and you want to talk.
What do they want you to do? Stand in the stadium and have a chat while you're singing Sweet Caroline? It's like, come off.
Well, exactly.
Although that would be quite good fun.
I mean, there's other Villa fans that like to be all over the media, but anyway, enough of that. But yeah, that was I didn't even get back to them. It's like, fuck off. And then in the morning, well, in the afternoon when I finally woke up, because we got a hotel in Harrow, I got an email from BBC West Midlands saying, "Oh, yeah, can we get you on the show about 9 o'clock? That'll be fantastic." Nope. But they did, they said the angle they wanted to go down, obviously it never happened. Is it more of a relief being out of the Championship, or is it a delight being back in the Premier League? So how are you going to answer that?
I'm delighted to be out of the Championship. I'll be quite honest that though I quite like the Tuesday night games, I won't be missing, with the greatest respect, Rotherham. Won't be missing
the
Blues.
Well, they got relegated anyway.
Well, that type of game. You know, I'd have to say, you know, see you later, Blues. See you later, Albion. Well, you know, back in the big time.
See you later, Leeds.
See you later, who?
Hurrah!
Who? they're one of the smaller clubs in the division, aren't they now? Isn't that, no?
I feel sorry for Derby after beating them. Now they've got to actually play them again.
Yeah. I think that's the horrible. That's how we'd have been feeling ultimately. That I think that you know, we'd have had that amazing run, somehow clawed our way into the playoffs, and then you'd have had that huge anticlimax.
Mm.
I just think that you look at the fixtures, you look at the Premier League, for all of its flaws and all of its faults, is the place to be. We have to be in there.
Yeah. I mean, I'm glad just to be at the Championship. That's the main thing. But Chris, when you cast your mind back to when we were previously in the Premiership, there was a sense of apathy, and it was like a kind of a whatever about it. And it kind of lost its luster. But after three seasons out, you're kind of feeling a bit of a fresh excitement now.
Yeah, I think it was, as soon as really O'Neill left, we had the Houllier season where nobody quite knew what to expect. And I think we finished 10th, didn't we?
His heart wasn't in it.
And then it was just a really slow, painful decline. Mm-hmm. And by the end, as you said, the apathy had set in. And, we thoroughly deserved to go down, and not just off one bad season. This was probably, four or five seasons coming.
Yeah.
So to be out of the Championship, for me, it's certainly more of a relief. I think we've dodged a massive financial bullet. And there's other, implications of being in the Championship, like the way fans are getting ripped off to go to games, which we've done on numerous occasions. Sheffield Wednesday is a prime example. I think the standard of the refereeing is nothing short of
dreadful.
Absolutely laughable.
We have VAR now.
We do. And ultimately, it's where we have to be.
There's no argument about that, really. It's where we have to be. But in those seasons that you've just mentioned, I think we pretty much wrote the rule book on how not to do the Premier League. So
even the fact that we got relegated the season the bloody TV deal kicked in, it was just like, it was typical Villa.
Yeah, like trebled or doubled or whatever it was.
But do you not think that the 3 years we've been down, we made some chronic mistakes, but on the side, our club almost needed to disintegrate, didn't it? It needed to have that implosion, that complete.
We needed to burn the house down, didn't we? We needed to knock it down and start again.
We did.
It's funny, because going back, I always remember when we got relegated the time before. O'Neill and Turner, that calamity in that season. And it felt like you needed a reset. And that as a kid, obviously I was quite advanced as a kid, thinking this club needs a reset. I was thinking this needs a reset. So I was almost emotionless when they got relegated, because I just thought, this is what this club needs. It needs a kick up the backside. But the thing is, this was only literally 5 years after we won the European Cup. So that shows you a gross accelerated decline, decay. But this was as Chris said, it was like a slow burn road to nowhere.
And the flip side of that is that it was a rapid and unexpected acceleration to promotion. I mean, for anyone who listens to this.
It caught pretty much everybody off guard, and we'd already had the season is over party on this show.
The streamers were still up at the Villa Underground. It was a fantastic party. we regaled of tales of Dr. Tony, the tax, the lack of... It was all great fun.
It was just, I was emptying empty bottles back into crates to try to take them down the recycling.
I'd stuff Keith Wyness back into the barrel. And it was, you can't actually explain it. Our crashing out of the Premier League was that slow, horrible death of I don't know, our modern era, if you like. And we've rocketed back into the Premier League when I can't imagine many people would have expected it, possibly even fewer. Even having got into the playoffs, I think it'd be hard. You mentioned clubs like Leeds. I think it'd be very hard for Leeds to recover from this. And Derby and whatnot, they're normally in the mix, aren't they?
I think Derby, they'll be all right because it was a step. It's yeah. a step of progress because last time they obviously losing so many finalists, but the momentum at the end, they beat the Baggies, they beat Leeds, and they vastly improved. But this was completely unexpected for most people. I mean, Christian Purslow in his interviews,
the Cheshire Cat.
Suddenly, was making out that he wasn't surprised. And it's like, yeah, I think you're lying there, son. But as he said in one of them, like, once we got into the playoffs, then you thought that we would be unstoppable.
Well, we'd all said that, hadn't we, through the season?
Yeah.
If we could actually make the bloody playoffs.
We didn't really get out of third gear in the playoffs, so we made it a bit harder than we expected. But it shows a lot when West Brom, who were known for scoring goals, showed us so much respect that they just set out to stop us, and that was their game through both legs of the tie. So we were seen as a big threat.
And I think Derby did the same, didn't they, in the final?
I think they did. I think we perhaps commented before the game that I thought the West Brom doubleheader was the hardest part.
I think that's what I always said.
We pretty much settled on that. We went with a measured confidence, didn't we, to Wembley, that we knew we had enough to beat them if the right Villa turned up. And I think actually we showed a bit of character and a bit of brains because there were similarities between the West Brom game and...
We'll get into the final in a minute. We'll just quickly we'll go through a quick 3 points and then we'll get into the actual game itself. Quick 3 points. I'll kick off a competition that we won once upon a time in 1982. Liverpool won the Champions League against Spurs in the worst game that I... Since the 2000 FA Cup final between Villa and Chelsea.
So correct. That is the only comparable
Absolutely
game I can think of.
Absolutely awful.
If it wasn't for that penalty at the start, do you think that would have changed the game?
It was turgid. It was absolutely... Do you know what? I thought I was watching it with friends, and you know, like when you've got a group of friends together, you know, all football fans, you know, when that group of friends have got the TV on and then no one's watching the game? I think that's like a sign that this is supposed to be the showpiece footballing event of domestic of club football, and it was just on borderline unwatchable, I thought.
Yeah, but as a tournament in itself, it was one of the better Champions League tournaments. Mm. I would venture. I mean, the final didn't really do the rest of the tournament justice. I mean, Liverpool had pretty much already done the heavy lifting by knocking out Bayern and Barcelona. Ajax obviously dazzled. Spurs comeback exploits were on another level as well. So it had a lot of excitement. It's just a shame that it didn't produce in the final game. Chris Budd has come up with a Villa connection to the final.
Wow.
So there was an interesting bit of trivia I saw online in that Daniel Sturridge became the second player to win the Champions League with an English side. He won it obviously 2012 with Chelsea, 2019 obviously with Liverpool. He was sat on the bench. The only player to have done that before was one Jimmy Rimmer, who previously won it with Manchester United in 1968, and of course with Villa in 1982, where he was subbed off early in the game for Nigel Smith.
9 minutes, on the 9 minutes mark.
Wow, he
managed to sit on the bench as well for 81 minutes, after giving most Villa fans a heart attack when he went off on the ninth minute. I remember that day, and I thought it was curtains. Typical Villa, at least give, I mean, we're underdogs anyway, at least give us a fighting chance. But when your keeper goes off, who was renowned as Jimmy Rimmer was renowned as a decent keeper in those days, in his spells at Arsenal as well as Man United and Villa. But anyway, Nigel Spinks was born, so all was good. Right, point number two, Mr. Rogers.
So Neymar, who appears to be having the standard South American footballer breakdown come disintegration of his career, as things seem to be falling down around him. Now, he's now got a rape allegation against him, so this sort of, on the backdrop of many things sort of falling apart. So he's been stripped of the Brazilian captaincies, you know, fallen out with teammates at PSG over wanting more wages, and you know, this is probably one of the highest paid footballers in the world. He's obviously come out into the press and onto social media with a 6 or 7 minute to camera denial, which you know you'd expect, and obviously is allowed a right of reply. But there's also a lot of stuff in the press that you have to wonder where it comes from, but suggests that Neymar might have some answering to do, I think, for his actions with this individual. But his behaviour overall, does it sound like the behaviour of a man who has a £11.5 million helicopter?
He also got into fire, obviously banned for 3 European games after slagging off the official that gave Manchester United that VAR-assisted penalty. called it a disgrace. And yeah, this girl, it's a lot of football players meet girls on Instagram, if you're a lady and listening. And a couple of girls have got in touch with me over the years about Villa players sliding into their DMs.
Such as?
We keep a confidential order on all of these things. It's just a need-to-know basis. We don't spread the goss. I could whisper. I've almost whispered a few players' names there, but this is not a ASMR channel, but maybe we could do...
Tell us, David. Tell us all of the secrets.
Which Villa player is the most sordid, do you think?
A boom, boom, boom. No, allegedly.
This is a few years ago. Maybe in the next edition, we'll see what the listeners want.
Rimmer by name? Rimmer by... No.
once they got chatting on WhatsApp and Instagram, he flew her over from Brazil to Paris and then put her up in a hotel and then apparently appeared drunk on her doorstep. And the rest is potentially allegedly... Is it extortion or is it... Just as you said, somebody with a £11.5 million helicopter having his way, we shall see. Chris Bird, point number three.
Well, on a slightly more somber note, obviously the death of former Arsenal invincible Jose Antonio Reyes at the age of 35. He died in a car accident over the weekend. He obviously received a really nice minutes applause and tribute before the Champions League final. You know, he played over 100 games for Atletico Madrid, went to Sevilla, won the league with Real Madrid, and obviously had a really successful spell with Arsenal, as well as being a Spanish international. So it's really sad to obviously lose another, you know, member of the football family, you know, so young as well. I didn't realise he was only 35 still.
Well, he joined Arsenal so young, didn't he? And that...
Sevilla.
You wonder whether actually that he joined Arsenal too young. You know, he went on to have a very, very good career in Spain, didn't he?
Yeah, because they actually loaned him out, didn't they, to Real Madrid when they won the title. He was on loan when he...
He was a huge, big money signing. And I wonder if I'd say he struggled, but it was in at a time where, you know, that Arsenal team was so, so good that I think if you weren't, you know, really at the top of your game. And he was still learning his trade, if memory serves me right at that point. But, you know, the stats and his career speaks for itself, really.
He was always going to play second fiddle to the likes of Henry.
Yeah, exactly.
Et cetera at that point. But he was, you know, a very talented player. Obviously a shame to pass away so young.
Yeah. Right, before we go on, I just want to give a big shout out to the latest My Old Man Said patrons who have got on board as we career into the Premier League. We need to seriously up our game when we're going in a world of Premier League podcasts, because they've got shitloads of patrons and followers. And also, like, the Anfield Rap has an app that they charge £5 for, and they've got a studio and working staff on their podcast.
I've got a studio.
So what kind of studio?
It's more of a box.
Some kind of sex dungeon or something.
Listen, similarly to Neymar, allegedly, I have to... sex dungeon. I call it the Posma Lounge.
So we were, oh God. So we'll have to up our game. So thank you very much for the patrons that signed up in the last couple of weeks. So Victoria Cozans, Richard Bayliss, Harinder Matharu, Patrick Singleton, Stu Powell, Nicholas Price, Adam Imms, David Griffin, Ollie Wright, Ian Bruntlett, David Grimmett, David Bound, Kikru, I didn't quite get this name. It's not a real name, I don't think. But thank you, Kikru. And also a big thanks for David James Williams for upping his pledge, because we are now Premier League. As he says, it's time for the Premier League money to trickle down to sites like ourselves. If you want to support us as we go into the Premier League and increase the scope of what we can do, and there are some crazy ideas, so please do get on board. We go into the Premier League to take on all the Premier League podcasts, so we need your help to do that, and you will be rewarded with fantastic shows. Please go to myomansaid.com and click on the Patreon link, and you'll find all the details there. Right, before we finally get on to the playoff final, I think it's time for a quick Scott Hogan touch count.
Oi, oi.
Before we get into the Scott Hogan touch count, though, what do you think Scott Hogan's future is realistically?
Roofing, I don't know, maybe you could learn a trade of some sort.
One question is, does he have a contract where promotion means his wages are triggered? I would say so.
Probably. Mm, yeah.
So if he was around 30-ish, he's probably gone up to 40, 45, I would. I mean, I'm just throwing a number
hoping
out
hoping it's
there.
Not in the same league as Ross McCormack.
Yeah, I don't know if I believe that, though. I mean, that would be Keith Wyness at his worst if it's true.
Which kind of makes me fear that it might be true.
Yeah.
You have to take all these things with a pinch of salt. Are they really stupid enough to give Ross McCormack a 70,000?
Yes, they absolutely are.
They really are, Dave. Come on.
Well, this is the thing, because if I'm the CEO of Villa, or on the staff that actually determines contracts, there is no way anybody who's not even played a game in the Premier League gets a 70 grand a week contract. But some of the contracts that they dished out, even before Dr. Tony, in the season before.
Mm. Oh, like Micah Richards and people like that.
No, exactly. But in terms of Hogan, where do you think, factoring in all these permutations, where do you think he ends up next season?
He either is a squad player at Villa and probably doesn't even get on the bench. He may have the option to go to Sheffield United, although from what I hear, they don't seem to have their house in order at Bramall Lane. So
no,
I don't know where he's going. Yeah, I mean, there's talk that Wilder might walk out on them. It's got that bad behind the scenes. So Hogan,
it's got that bad that he would go to the baggies.
Well, yeah. Will Hogan be in the Premier League with either? Mm. Maybe not. I don't think he's... if you're Sheffield United, he's not top of the pecking order there. He's far down the pecking order.
What's
Villa,
Sheffield United's problem, for those who don't know?
Apparently, their owners aren't willing to... Yeah, their owners just aren't willing to spend.
Mm. Political behind the scenes, isn't it, around how they approach, I think, staying in the Premier League.
So it's not what's happened previously, it's what's going to happen...
Yeah.
Or what isn't happening, as it were.
Henceforth.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Villa surely won't want to make a huge loss on Hogan. So will they just sort of let him sit there and maybe loan him out? I wouldn't be surprised if we keep him and loan him out to a Championship side.
Yeah, I think similarly. I think that Hogan, for me, just hasn't shown enough in a Villa shirt. He has had opportunities. Yeah. And even from a shop window point of view, I'm still surprised that Sheffield United took him. If only they took him as an option, I guess, as just cover.
Yeah.
But I can't see anything other than a loan with a view to a permanent somewhere in the Championship.
Right, let's get to the Scott Hogan touch count meter. And
I'm so excited. I'm quite excited.
This one touches on his international career.
Oh, no.
Which is only beginning. It's still a little chuckling, cracking out of the egg. As we, I think he made his debut against Turkey in a friendly, but he's only made one, let's call it competitive game appearance, and that was in the is it the UEFA League? What do they call it? I can't remember.
Nations League.
The Nations League, indeed. When Ireland played at home against Wales, Wales won that game 1-0, and Scott Hogan came on as a 75th minute substitute. So the question is,
who wants
to go first? By the way,
Dan can go first.
Very kind of you, Christopher.
So in his first competitive appearance for Ireland, in those 15 minutes, how many touches did Scott Hogan have?
Scott Hogan had 6 touches.
Chris, well,
whatever Dan's going to say, in the true spirit of the Scott Hogan touch count, I'll have to say less, don't I? So I'm going to say 4.
what a mistaker to maker. If you're going to go less, Chris Bird, you go less by 1, because it's 5.
A draw? Oh, my word.
Oh. Missed an open...
Didn't this happen last time as well?
Chris Bird misses an open goal.
No.
Didn't this happen last time as well with Max?
No, that one wasn't as open as this, because all you had to do here was go one lower to hedge your bets.
Scoreboard. And
you cover off that 5.
Oh, I just feel like...
I still think five touches for Scott Hogan. I mean, he's got a bit ballistic there, hasn't he, in 15 minutes?
Maybe this will work as a tiebreaker, maybe it won't.
God.
Did he have a shot? And if so, how many?
No. A big fat no.
Yes and one.
Dan's
going to
win this now.
Dan wins on the
tiebreaker. Do you know what? I'm going to describe how that win feels. Do you know that moment when Derby broke through and fucking knobbed it in, and that boy's running in front of the Leeds fans, waving his penis around? That's me right now in front of you, Chris Bird.
And they were all doing the Spygate celebration.
That's me.
Yeah, and it was on target as well. So
of course it was.
There you go.
Wow.
Was it ever in doubt?
What's he doing in the penalty area? Come on, Scott.
I don't know how Chris Bird's going to sleep tonight. Missed an open goal and then a draw turned to defeat.
Oh yeah, I
feel like Leeds right now.
Oh yeah, David, crack open the tequila. We're back on. We're back in the game.
Come on,
the celebration continues.
Fetch me Birka Bjarnason. Let's sacrifice him.
Poor old Bjørka.
We'll make him smile one day.
He's a miserable sod.
I was sitting maybe two or three rows back from Bjørka, and he had his black baseball cap on, and, and he didn't smile at all. Poor old Bjørka. Miserable sod. Right, on to the playoff final. The game itself. Finally. Since it was, you know, a week ago, we decided we wouldn't go straight into it. So we're putting it in now. First of all, the atmosphere in the ground. What did you think? The mosaic turned out to be Villa. It's actually spelt out. Pretty good. Not as well defined as the first mosaic, but the idea of this one was obviously all the flags joined in. So it was the whole end getting involved.
Yep.
Derby's flags were all right, but I think that Villa stole its... if you were giving points in terms of who was the winner there. And I think, I was halfway line, I think Villa noise-wise took the points as well. But I would say that, being biased.
I thought the atmosphere was very good.
It was a very good atmosphere.
Yeah.
Before the game, it was brilliant. I thought just before we scored, it had got very quiet and
quite
and
nervy.
Both sets of, and really nervy with both sets of supporters. It got very flat. And then as soon as we scored, the Villa end exploded
wild,
from then on through
it?
The second half. It was brilliant.
Yeah. Because, I mean, going into the actual game, after the early exchanges, well, you always feel comfortable. It did begin to drift a bit in terms of... it hadn't really set out a narrative for, you didn't know, there doesn't seem to be a real ebb and flow about it, or you didn't see where it was actually going to end up or how it was going to pan out.
No, there wasn't a natural, you couldn't say, oh, this is, narrative is a good word, you couldn't see how it was going to pan out. And I think that's what Chris's observation is, that there was that, you know, the excitement, I suppose, of the first 30 minutes, and then there was a 10-minute spell. I remember sitting in my seat before Algarci scored, and you think, oh God, it's not going to be one of those days, is it? And that's where I drew a bit of similarity with the West Brom game, that Derby's game plan, I think, was to stifle us as much as and maybe try and nick one. But I thought that, you know, through the goal that we took, I think that summed up our performance on the day, that telling moments. Defensively as well, we were very, very good. And I think that we earned that win. And I think that reflected well and was picked up in some of the press as well. It showed a bit of dynamism at times, but I think it was a gritty, determined performance as well.
Yeah. There was no real surprises in the team.
No.
I mean, interestingly, of the first game we had in the Championship, if you cast your minds right back, Di Matteo, Sheffield Wednesday, only two players remained in the match day squad for the playoff final, which was Green and Grealish, which is promising. Obviously, they're being young guns. So there has been a massive transformation within the Championship. But yeah, sorry, going back to the actual starting team, very few surprises. It was just a matter of if he preferred to have the impact of Green rather than starting with him and having a go at Ashley Cole. I mean, I thought Ashley Cole was played fine. It's not as if Villa set about him or...
it's not the Ashley Cole of 15 years ago. I think that's the important thing to...
Yeah, which is obvious, but he's still good enough to be... He was a world-class fullback, so he's still good enough to be better than most things at this level.
You put Albert Adoma against him, he's not going to get done for pace.
Yeah.
Old Uncle Albert.
Although I actually thought Adoma put a shift in, to be fair. I actually thought we were far more effective with him on the field than when Green came on in the second half, who didn't actually get at Ashley Cole once.
Everyone
thought
point.
Green had come on and give us this, you know, this bundle of energy for the last 20 minutes, and actually he never got a touch.
I thought all that energy came from Algarci. You know, Algarci
was superb. A couple of the runs he went on in the first half, he was so positive.
So I don't know. I was talking to someone about this before the game. That is Wembley a different size pitch, or does it, you know, is it the fact that
apparently
you're
apparently not?
I know,
the
is
dimensions
it,
are the same as Villa
it's Park. It's optical illusion, isn't it? And you know, you start.
It's slightly wider than Villa Park.
Slightly wider, so but it's probably, you know, we're talking fine margins, aren't we? But it felt like it felt like the stage and the type of pitch where, you know, it suits Algarci. And I think, I mean, he's obviously a lone player who will have gone back now, and I think that we've got a big decision to make, because I think if we don't have the opportunity to look at him, I think other clubs would.
I think we've got the option to buy, haven't we?
Yeah.
I think he wants to stay. So I think of all the players we've got with an option to, I think he's as good as a done deal. Him and Courtney Hawes are as good as done.
Yeah.
Yeah, very impressive on the day. And I think that was important, because as Green's impact is still a question mark. Adoma's, for all the work I think he puts in,
well, he's gone anyway. He's gone.
Yeah, he's gone.
He's irrelevant
he's
now.
He's dead to us. But on the day, you know, I thought Alghazi was key to us. And McGinn's
he deserved his goal, didn't he?
Alghazi really did deserve his goal. It was a fantastic header. It really is a great header.
Well, it came off his shoulder.
Mm. Is it Peter with shin? Alghazi's shoulder? Is it in the same
bang league? In the corner?
Yeah.
Great finish.
Mm. Great time to score as well.
Oh, it was amazing. And Q, absolute chaos in the Villa end when he scored. Because just the release of energy.
I got hit by about 14 flags as people just start wildly whipping me.
Are you sure you haven't got a sex dungeon? So it seems to be a theme running through this.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And then to score again reasonably early in the second half.
We came out really quickly, didn't we, in the second half? We looked like Smith had put a rocket up their arse and we had the momentum going into the second half.
Because at half time, I saw Smith having stern words with McGinn just as he was going in down the tunnel, which was quite interesting. I think I said on the bonus podcast that I was surprised he didn't wait until they were in the dressing room. So obviously he saw something he wasn't kind of happy about or something that was obvious that needed to be adjusted. But there did seem to be a bit more energy and focus.
Yeah, McGinn definitely when they played went back better, out. Better than he did in the two West Brom games. Mm. He certainly wasn't a stifle. There were a couple of occasions where we just smashed through their midfield and carried the ball. Yeah. It was the McGinn, you know, we've come to love through the whole season.
Yeah.
And I wonder whether it was that you know, maybe it did require that just that little reminder from Smith. I'm sure it happened to other players, is that, you know, we had such an opportunity, all the work that had gone before, and absolutely put everything you've got into the, particularly the second half, the 45 minutes that came. You're a Premier League footballer. Yeah. And that can't be lost, you know. Sometimes players, you know, in the moment, in the, you know, the atmosphere and whatnot, could just need to be reminded of how important it is and what that could mean for them.
Yeah.
You know, players like Hourihan and others as well, I'm sure.
But at 2-0, I was thinking that this game's, we're home and dry, and there's a third in this.
It's a weird
at least.
Twist.
But then Lampard made his changes. Mm. Marriott came on the 63rd minute, Waghorn shortly after, about five or six minutes later. And pretty much instant, completely different shift in the game. Mm. And Derby certainly rode out the rest of the game on top.
17 minutes of injury time did wonders for my blood pressure.
Horrible.
Yeah, I think officially seven, but... But I think the last 20 minutes probably flipped the whole... If you look at the stats at the end of the game, I think they flipped them all into Derby's favour.
We just stopped
Derby's
managing
possession,
the game.
Derby's possession was 57 at the end of the game. I mean, in terms of shots, Villa had three shots on target, Derby two. And that was the thing, the lack of end product for Derby, I thought.
Yeah, yeah.
Although they had 10 shots to Villa's 9 overall. But one thing I did say on the last podcast was the difference between this playoff final and last year's was we were going to get a corner in the first 5 minutes, and we did on I think it was 4:32, if I remember correctly.
And actually, we had a really good chance from it, didn't we? It fell to Twan Zabe, and you think if he had a bit of composure, he buries it. It was one of those chances that in the ground you don't really realise. You see the replay and you think, fucking hell.
We had such purpose about us, and you can't contrast it to Bruce. And I think
there was the Grealish chance, wasn't there, as well, where again you see the replay back and you think if he's got a little bit more composure, which you'd expect from him, he buries it. Same with the Abraham chance and a couple of runs from Alghazi, where you think if he pulls the trigger earlier, probably scores.
Yeah, but I thought we were helped by how Lampard actually set up, because I think in the last podcast we were talking about I said I'd be surprised if Huddleston starts because I think McGinn would pickpocket him every time. Mm. And Huddleston started. Marriott was left on the bench.
They didn't have a recognised striker, did they, to begin with? Which no. Which was quite strange. Mm.
And Marriott, as he did against Leeds, as soon as he came on, he scores. And you're thinking, well...
It was too cautious from Lampard, wasn't it?
In a game where it's, you know, you're not going to get that many chances, and as I've just said, they had two shots on target.
Mm.
You know, you need a proper striker to put him away, and obviously the Marriott put his away. But how did you feel when he scored? The only moment where I thought, is this Villa self-destructing? And I said this in the bonus podcast was when Tyron Mings made that last ditch tackle with the outside of his foot. Yeah. And then he went down injured.
He thought, here we go.
But not only that, Courtney House was in the corner flag warming up and Tyron Mings stayed down. So obviously you're thinking there's a bit of, you know, probably time wasting here. But then the Villa bench must have known it was serious or not early doors. So why was Courtney House not called back earlier and stripping down? He's, you know, he's still out there and you're thinking, hang on a minute, they're about to kick off and we're down to 10 men. McGinn slots in at centre back.
Probably our smallest player.
All 4 foot three of him. And you're thinking, oh, really? Are we self-destructing because we've just, you know, we've been naive here. We've just been focusing on Mings and not thinking, right, let's get somebody stripped down. Because Courtney Horse has been warming up anyway. Get him down. Because, you know, how long was Mings down there for? Like half an hour or something?
Yeah, a few minutes. A few days.
Should get a few days.
It felt a long time.
You know, call House back. Get him... start to get him stripped off, so at least when it kicks off we can get a man straight back on, so it's 11 against 11. So we did let our guard down there, and Derby had a chance, which in the end didn't come to fruition, to, you know, peg us back, and then we'd be kicking ourselves then, and we would be ranting on this podcast about how potentially they cost us. It was, you know, that would have been coaching, that would have been the bench being a bit naive. Funny enough, I bumped into Neil Cutler, the goalkeeper coach, at the Hilton about midnight when obviously the party was in full effect. And because you'd have noticed if you were watching the bench, I mean, I was sitting just above it. He was always in the technical area whispering things in Dean Smith's ear. And during the game, I was going, what's he doing? He's a goalkeeping coach. What's he got to say? tell Steer to take three steps to the right. And so I saw him after and I said, I'm watching that game and you were in that technical box more than anybody else. I said, what were you actually doing? And he said, well, at the end of the day, you got to look busy, haven't you?
He was whispering, recall Gallini, recall Gallini.
We need Gallini. This Kalinic is crap. Yeah, no, it was quite funny to see a goalkeeping coach so active, because normally goalkeeping coaches, their work is on the training field and it's not necessarily, they haven't got much of a role to play actually in game unless it goes to penalties or something.
I mean, one thing you can give him credit for was he's clearly got Steer knocked into shape in the last few months, because I actually thought Steer had a really good game, although he didn't have many saves to make. Some of his catches later on and the way he just killed the game on numerous occasions.
Well, what he didn't do
was...
Even
a little bit of cheeky time wasting.
Yeah, well, what he didn't do, which was what he did... I'm really pleased he didn't, which is like against Albion, was repeatedly just pass the ball to the opposition and give them a free run on goal.
Yeah.
So that alone, I was appreciative of Mr. Cutler's input.
Because, you know, I look at Steer and I'm thinking, is he big enough to be a top keeper? But then you look at like Chelsea's, you know, 13-year-old goalkeeper, and even like David De Gea or whatever, who obviously has had a bit of
Mark Bunn was a bit of a hobbit, hasn't he?
Yeah, well, not necessarily a hobbit, but kind of slight of frame, you know, probably 6 foot as opposed to, you know, your 6'4", 6'5". But no, he was sound, and we said a few podcasts ago, you know, whether he can play for us in the Premier League, we'll learn a lot about him in the playoffs.
I'd say so.
apart from his passing to the Albion, I think he passed that test, and it's up to Kalinic to impress to win his place.
I'd agree. I mean, there was a lot of guys who impressed on the day. I think Smith said after the game, didn't he, that he was confident that if Mings and Twanzabi had good games, we'd win the game. And I thought they were both superb. Yeah, I thought Twanzabi was fantastic. He's so composed.
How Twanzabi isn't. He could be in the Man United squad, and they, you know, they lack a. You wonder
when you look at Smalling and bloody Phil Jones, you think he's a better athlete than both of them combined.
He's a better footballer all round, you know, far more composed, reads the game fantastically, physically very imposing, doesn't waste the ball. You know what?
Yeah,
he's be a very good DM, I think. as much as anything in a squad like that.
Yeah.
But he was superb at Wembley. And for a club, you know, this is quite reflective, I suppose, upon the 3 years that we've been down and the couple that led to it. Villa didn't have anything like a Mings or a Tuan Zebi for years. You know, we had the Ron Vlahs of the world, who the Richard Dunns, the...
James Collins.
I remember when Yoris Sakure signed and we thought, finally, we've got a centre-back here with pace.
Mm.
And this is something we didn't have because obviously we had Collins and Dunns and, you know, Villar as well. Although Villar, in some games, he's meant to be a cripple, but he managed to cripple. Run... Who was it? Concrete cripple. Marshmallow Ron. I remember at Villa Park, somebody was put through as, like, I think Walcock or some, you know, Theo Walcock or something. Somebody who's like fast, and he actually ran them down and got a tackle in. I can't remember who it was, but I was always amazed. So he's not, you know, he wasn't that much of a slouch.
Well, I was like a number of players at Villa over many years have bought who, no difference at Larson really, that they were fantastic footballers who were hampered by a chronic career-ending injury. And I have to say, it sounds as though that Chester actually has one of these types of injuries. It seems to be the word on the street, doesn't it?
Well, casting my mind back to early January, well, December even, where I got a message from one of the My Old Man Said listeners, followers, who said there's a Villa player who's injured and he's pretty much out for the season, and they're probably going to have to operate on him. And he was basically saying when news gets out, it's going to be a bit of a kick in the nuts to supporters and everybody. And that man was Chester. Mm. He didn't name any names at the time, but that man was Chester. And the way that, if you now with hindsight, look back how Villa... Managed
his injury. It's dreadful, isn't it?
Well, no, not managed it, but how, in terms of the media, how they got that out.
Yeah, yeah.
How they just drip-feed it. Oh, yeah, he should be back. Yeah, maybe February. Oh, yeah, maybe March. But I had a clear bit of info that he was out for the season, and Chester never played this year.
Hmm.
So they would have known that, but it's the way it was bang, headline, December, late December, Chester out for season.
Mm-hmm.
We're like, fuck, we haven't got a centre-back.
Again.
This whole idea of Bruce starting with one recognised centre-back, and you remember that Tuan Zebi was only played at right-back last season, and then suddenly he's out for the season, and he played a few games when he wasn't 100%. So it was interesting to see that, yeah, actually Chester was buggered, and he was meant to be going for an operation. It was never announced, but in the minds of fans at large, he was out. He was always coming back. He was coming back in March. Then he was coming back in April. Then he'd have been fit for the playoffs. But the reality was,
he was finished.
We never saw him again. But talking about these injured players and getting them cheap, the Mings situation is interesting because he's obviously had proper injuries. I mean, that's why he was over the moon winning this. You know, it's the highlight of his career, as he said.
The best part of 4 years, 4 seasons of injury.
I mean, if we had money, we could have bought him in January outright. And at a cheap price. Now he's going to cost twice, I think, of maybe three times of what we could have got him for. But, and how many times has he broken down on the pitch so far? Like, even in the final, he didn't get through it. So he's somebody who's like, he's this talisman figure. We all love him. But is he going to give us, you know, 30 games in the Premier League? It's a concern. If we're going to pay over the odds for him, that's why I'm mentioning this.
My only thinking is, and this is the one thing, one huge part of getting promoted that I don't like or look forward to, is the risk that comes with making the mistakes that we did before, you know, where we acquired players who had some obvious ailment or they weren't fit for purpose, and then we get hamstrung, not, you know, not just on fee, but wage is actually the real crippler now.
Yeah.
Mings is a good example because we've seen all of the reasons why to buy him, why we should buy him, but we shouldn't delude ourselves that there's a reason why a club like Bournemouth might want to sell him too. And that's because they paid out for him, and he basically hasn't been able to play for them because of chronic long-term injury. Hopefully he's over that. You know, we're not saying, I don't think for one second, that we wouldn't want that, but it's got to come with a caveat, hasn't it?
Yeah, because, I mean, there's an interest, like now might not be the best time to buy Mings because, you know, the hype train is rolling at its fastest. But if you drop off a few weeks and start to play a little bit of hardball, and his injury record doesn't really bring other people to the yard to buy him, then we might say, well, instead of 15, we'll give you 10 now.
I think we need to be restrained on fees. I really do.
Yeah.
Because we've been stung there. We've been stung there many, many times.
I mean, you know, in the same breath, we're saying, I think I've said in previous podcasts, the first person you sign up is Mings. But at the same breath, you play the market. And while we're still hyper about the win, we might not have clear heads in terms of buying players, especially like the ones that have helped us over the line. I mean, even Tu Enzebi has been injury prone throughout his time at Aston Villa. He's missed chunks of the season. That might be something that's holding him back at United. Yeah. I mean, I've read somewhere that potentially there's a loan deal for him there, because United might not give him the amount of games he probably wants. They probably maybe not see him as the finished article for next season, and they'd like to see him play in the Premier League. Mm. The only problem is if he becomes the mainstay at Villa, then I just hate the whole idea of him having to sit on the bench when we play Manchester United.
Yeah, and there's also a little bit of when you've got players on loan, you feel like you're developing them for someone else, and then he may not even go to play for Man United. We develop him for another season, then he goes and signs for, you know, insert other middling Premier League team. That's the thing that I have to say to Enzebi. If I had to buy someone, I probably would go after him quite hard.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're being a bit harsh on Man United middling team, middling Premier League team, because I think he's somebody who could play in Spain. You know, he could play for PSG.
Yeah, I know that.
He could be picked up with somebody, you know, somebody with serious cash.
No, but what I meant was if we developed him and then, I don't know, say he went and signed for, I don't know, a Southampton or a, do you know what I mean? The Man United loan him to us for a season and then sell him, and then we don't buy him. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anyway, it doesn't matter. It's all hypothetical.
When we were loaning these players, even though we're developing them, we actually got them in for a mission. That mission was quite simple. It was to get promoted. And when you're in the Premier League, it's a different thing, because yes, you will be developing loan players when actually you want to build your own infrastructure in the Premier League. It's not like there's not a clean-cut mission like to get promotion. Exactly.
I think Perslow said it himself, even from a pure cold hard business point of view, you need to be bringing in players who can have some resale value. You look at the amount of guys who we're going to release. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we joke about people like Scott Hogan, but the net loss that you're going to make on these guys at some point is just chronic. Astronomical.
Yeah, absolutely chronic.
Yeah. You know, Whelan, Hutton, Bunn, Yedinak, Elphick, all these guys who were leaving, even if we'd have kept them and tried to sell them, you wouldn't get any money for any of them.
Well, there's some weird narratives with some of those players, and Hutton's a good one to pick out because, you know, he's everyone knows who he is. The fact is that his career's had longevity at the club for so long has actually been, it's not just about him being a good servant, it's because we couldn't offload him to anyone. Yeah. And I'm not saying we should have, and then he was treated poorly at some points across his career at Villa, don't get me wrong. But there are a number of players who were, you know, we were just...
Well, the whole premise of the bomb squad was they were on such high wages that nobody else would even think of taking them off our hands. Nope. I mean, that was the problem. You know, like, are we still talking? Sorry to interrupt. Are we still talking about the playoff final?
Somehow.
So when the final whistle went, I think we are. Are we? We're still talking about the playoff final, aren't we?
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah, in a roundabout way.
We were going to talk about the infrastructure of the squad after we finished talking about the playoff final. Did you think at 2-1 we were safe? I thought we were still comfortable. Apart from that, I think we segued from the Mings injury situation. So when Mings was down, that was the only time I thought this may be a little portal for them to get back. And Derby have already proven they can come back. They get the old cavalry going once Marriott comes off the bench.
They've scored a lot of late goals through the season. Yeah. Actually, Hawes came on and played really well for 10 minutes.
Yeah. No, exactly. He earned his medal.
I wouldn't say we were comfortable, but I think I always thought we had it in us to pick the ball up and get something on the break.
That's exactly how I felt.
Yeah.
Which, ironically, we didn't end up doing.
Just going back to the McGinn goal. Because of the nature of it, it was one of the first goal celebrating, you know, bang, you're up celebrating that goal. Because I'm one of these cagey characters that I'm watching the linesman and everything. So I know when...
I knew from the frantic whipping of flags that it had gone in.
So this one, I didn't know if they were going to call it or whatever, because McGinn said, McGinn seemed to suggest that, you know, sometimes that would have been, you know, goalkeeper fucking harassment or whatever.
But it's such a bad goalkeeping error. It's just one of those, isn't it?
Because I got up to celebrate and then froze and like, is he giving it? Is it what's going on? And then it was given, and I was like, oh shit, I've lost all my momentum of celebration.
Sat back down.
Yeah, I'll sit back down.
Back to my word search.
No, I think I was the same, to be honest. I sort of saw the ball at the net, looked at the linesman. The linesman didn't flag. I was like, right, let's go mental.
Yeah.
We're going up.
And it was a bit of a confusing one because I think you were about to say, weren't you, Chris, that the goal, when you re-look at it from every angle, you just can't work out what the goalkeeper's...
It looks worse, doesn't it?
Goalkeeper's trying to catch it in his midriff and you're thinking, what are you doing?
Yeah, there was mention of it being an own goal. And you think, well, how the hell is he scoring an own goal from
there? McGinn doesn't even have to jump, I don't think. Yeah. He's not tall, is he?
It's so bad.
Yeah, it's poor.
But thanks very much.
Poor old Keller Roos. It was his birthday on the 31st. So
do you know what? Like, he was pony through the whole game. Because there was a moment, wasn't there, early in the game where McGinn put him under pressure. Yes. He just had to pass it out for a throw and he had nowhere to go. There was a couple of moments where his distribution was poor. He flapped at crosses. I thought if we'd have ever put him under pressure, it was an accident waiting to happen.
Yeah, I agree.
Going into the game, I thought, well, he's probably he's finally broken above Scott Carson, so he might actually be better than Scott Carson.
Jesus Lord.
So, but then you think, actually, when you're watching, it wasn't like somebody on their way up, really. No. Roos, he's still got to prove himself, and he's kind of got to go back to the drawing board in some respects.
A quick nod on the McGinn goal as well. I had to laugh when I saw, I think it was Mings, wasn't it, tweeting after the game about...
Oh, yeah.
he just face planted, didn't he, in his celebration. McGinn definitely needs to practice his slides. He's done it two or three times this season. He's just made a mess of his goal celebration, hasn't he? He went to slide and just went smack straight into the floor.
It's off the carpet, doesn't it?
He literally headbutted the pitch. But it was a great moment that, you know, our... Player, you know, the players, player of the season, the fans, player, goal of the season, everything else. He was the fitting, you know, recipient of the biggest moment of the season in the end.
That's a very good point.
Yeah, I mean, he's a player that through recent Villa teams in time, you could have just dropped in. Like, you know, when we were under O'Neill desperately going for the Champions League places, we were one dynamic midfielder away and probably a 20 goal striker from breaking that top four. And he could have dropped in there nicely.
Mm. I mean, the similarities between him and Steve Sidwell are striking. I mean, and Tammy Abraham and Marlon Harewood, you know, when you really
neck and neck.
Exactly.
The stats don't lie, Dan.
They truly do.
I mean, in all seriousness, $2.5 million. I mean, there are very few things we're gonna give Steve Bruce credit for.
I mean, screw that Derby bus. Back. We should be sending money to Hibs.
Yeah,
it's staggering, really.
It's a seriously good
it's
value.
An absolute steal.
Yeah. No, screw the Derby coach. It's money to Hibs and Steve Bruce. I think.
Didn't Steve Bruce stick around for his payoff, though, in the end?
I don't know. Yannick Bolasie was there. He was a few rows behind me, actually.
Yeah, I heard he was there.
He was celebrating with Abraham after. It was a good celebration, actually.
It was. I thought, you know, it was strange because I was saying to my friend after walking out the ground, there'll have been a few players on the pitch after the game that had been quite bittersweet celebrations because you'd have thought quite a few of them will have known full well actually that either the phone call was coming or they knew already that they weren't getting a contract. Mm. So they knew it was their last sort of, you know, their final swan song.
But it was a nice way to go, you know, for the likes of Jedinak.
G'day, Villa fans. My work here is done. Dino's cut me loose from the pack. But you won't find me aimlessly wandering the Aston wastelands like the Lap, Tishbola or Adoma. My beard and I are destined for greater glories. After all, who scores in the playoffs with just one touch? Not even that critter Hogan could do that. I've also proved this season I am the fucking master at centre-back. Brucey was right about one thing at least. My Villa career highlight? Earning 40 grand a week. Or my Hawthorne's death stare, a.k.a. my sex face. The bum-fluffed young buck Grealish now leads your pride, after Gabby, Mika, Hutz and Elphick all passed away to the captain's graveyard. I leave the pride in good hands, so enjoy the wilds of the Premier League. But stay away from relegation, you Villa bastards. Pray to the god of beards for me, will ya? So I can get another club.
they were giving it large on the pitch. Mm. They were loving it. And at the end of the day, when you're a footballer, you want to win.
And there was a little clip, wasn't there, of Smith talking to the players that came out through the week. And it's right, because he said, you know, you've all had an input in this. Even Jedinak, who did very little through the season, but actually in the key moment, stepped up in the shootout at the Hawthorns and buried it.
The one touch in the playoff.
One touch goal.
That's all he needed.
And stared at the entire stadium.
Yeah. Whereas it stared at the Villa fans. It did. You fuckers. We couldn't get a better way to go, because most of the time in our recent history, it's players with their tail between their legs being like shunted out. Most fans kind of giving them shit.
Yeah. Or it's our best players being stripped, aren't they?
Yeah. And so, but this was like, and it was a nice, it was a, you know, kind of a Hollywood ending to it. Whether you're a lone player and you're not coming back, or whether your contract's over, it was for a change. It was a kind of a joyous way to, you know, leave Villa.
Mm. I mean, potentially it was a real
a rarity.
Like a bookend moment, you know. Hopefully, touch wood, moving forward, it's drawn a line under the best part of a decade of just, you know, financial mismanagement, bad decisions left, right and centre, atrocious football. Yeah. And hopefully, you know, it's the start of a new chapter moving forward, of something really positive and something that the fans actually buy into.
And the only thread that links the whole of that together is Grealish.
Yeah.
And it was something I was thinking about when, in the last few days, as the dust settles, really, that, you know, even at the beginning of this season, we were talking that this would have to be Grealish's season, where not only drags Villa back to the Premier League, but it would be quite defining of how his future career goes. You know, there were still huge doubts, you know, granted he had injuries and whatnot.
Yeah.
But I think it, you know, everything that's gone on in that time is mirrored, I think, to some greater or lesser degree in Grealish's career, you know, everything from the high of, you know, really, really showing his potential in that semi-final FA Cup win over Liverpool, losing his way with some off-the-field personal matters, you know, coming through some two pretty bad injuries, playing in, you know, the relegation team for the Premier League was bad enough, but Villa were, you know, lost at sea for the first couple of seasons in the Championship, to now being the huge, huge...
Well, they got in the playoff final.
Oh, fucking Christ. We've already touched upon, I think, that we could still be there now and we'd never have won that game. You know, if you don't attack.
I mean,
to double quote your words, we'd be lost at sea.
Yeah, we'd be lost at sea.
Are we finally at a point in the whole process where we can finally just put that game to bed and never talk about it again? Now that we've won a playoff final, we can just put it to bed and go. And we can of course be smug that we've replaced Fulham in the Premier League.
Oh, that's true.
We don't need to talk about playoff finals ever again, because we're never going to get relegated again. But no, going back to the Hollywood endings, the Hutton one was a sweet Hollywood ending. Whatever you think about Hutton, I mean, an Aston Villa Premier League team shouldn't have Hutton in it.
No.
But considering his personal journey, and they couldn't get rid of him because his wages were too high, so loaning was the only way. And the way he was, he was literally cast aside.
Bolton briefly, and
Forest,
Mallorca.
Forest, Mallorca, and, you know, sometimes he was just training with the youth team. And to get back with, you know, limited ability, but have such... amazing moments.
Oh, unbelievable.
Especially this, you know, this season against Hull, his goal away at Hull, and then the Blues Maradona moment.
I mean,
it's incredible, really.
One of the most iconic Villa Park moments of the last, I don't know,
25 years probably.
Yeah.
And then he's lifting the trophy at Wembley. Yeah.
I think for work rate and for professionalism and
sheer heart,
I think there's few footballers few footballers I can recall, you know, there's many have been heralded as icons and idols at Villa who couldn't actually give a monkey's about how they either perform or how they're perceived. To Hutton's credit, he's fashioned he'll be remembered, I think, for the right reasons, when actually you look at his career and it could have gone very, very, very sour for him. And I think, to his credit, he'll, you know, like the Blues goal, and, you know, you can't question the guy's heart.
And, you know, Whelan, he was getting a raw deal earlier on in the season,
and what a turnaround.
And he finishes on a high as well. It's.
I wouldn't be surprised to see him end up at somewhere like the Albion or something like that. I think he's got a lot to give.
We were talking about a nice Hollywood ending. Don't curse him. Oh, he had a beautiful ending. He turned it around. I wouldn't be surprised to see him at the Albion. Oh, God. Give the man a break.
At his age, for him to lose his place in the international team and to win it back when most international managers would be looking forward. But he was in that, the Ireland squad.
Mick
on
McCarthy
merit.
Has picked himself as player manager as well. So
yeah, true. Roy Keane's back.
And I think McGrath's probably going to be in the next game as well.
Beyond the
bar. But no, I think Whelan got man of the match in the last Ireland game as well.
Did he?
The Grealish story is obviously the one that tops them all. And he kind of did it in-game in a nutshell in that Blues away game. Mm. And that kind of summed up what's happened since we have been relegated, as Dan said, those, you know, big, bad injuries. But a ridiculous turnaround, obviously inspiring that 10-game run, which... He said, I think he said in his interview, he said to Tammy Abraham, if we get to 4 wins on the trot, we're going to do this. Just finally, I mean, we'll talk about how we're going to fare in the Premier League and the prospects of that in other shows to come over the summer holidays, so to speak. Just quickly, though, I mean, a lot of people, when teams go up, obviously, the money's there and they have to rebuild. And a lot of teams buy players out of the fear of relegation, and like Bournemouth, for example, when they went up, they stripped a lot of the players that had got consecutive promotions, and your Tommy Elphicks had no part to play, and that they were offloaded for newer players. Fulham is the most recent example, who had a winning style and a winning formula, but it wasn't trusted, and they suddenly lost their shine because they went against their roots and got in Ryan Babel.
And his hair. They're separate things. And they took the Michael Jackson statue down. That was a...
Yeah, well, that was the main problem.
You just lose your identity.
When you look at the Villa team, if they don't keep their loans, if none of the loans stay for whatever reason, then obviously we've released a load of players, then you're looking at a team that suddenly... missing. Elmo and Taylor, are they really going to be Dean Smith's starting fullbacks in the Premier League? I don't think so. I think one of the most important positions for Dean Smith to fully realise the way he wants to play will be an upgrade at both fullback situations. Mm. Mm. And Gilbert, the French guy?
Yeah, he was at Wembley, wasn't he?
Yeah, and maybe Gilbert's will do that job on the right-hand side with probably Elmo backing him up, but I think Villa needs somebody at left-back. So if you take those two out of the equation, to Nzobe Mings, we don't know if he's coming back. So that leaves you with Jed Steer.
That's it.
Grealish, McGinn, and then if Horahan's going to be considered a starter next season, and that's it.
Wow.
So you are really rebuilding completely.
Wow.
Hopefully we'll get El Ghazi, so that's another one.
Courtney Hawes, I think, might come in at left back, or he'll certainly be in the squad, won't he?
But you're talking about half of the first team at least we need. So that we're going to need games in pre-season. We're going to need to get players in early as well.
Yeah, wow. When you actually, you look at how many players we're releasing on, and then the question mark against every loan player, because, wow, it's a significant enforced rebuild, isn't it? And you can't just...
Yeah.
If anyone actually, because it could be easily levelled that Villa have just torn up, and this would have happened anyway, I think is an important point that we've made over many weeks. This
exact same problem we had at the end of last season was suddenly Snodgrass, Terry, etc. all going, and we have to start again.
But then, as you say, that you've got to then be realistic that, is El Mohammadi and is Neil Taylor, are they going to cut it at Premier League level? I think a player like Courtney House and Conor Hourihan, it's a major step up to the Premier League. Major step up. So you're not just talking about, you can't just be buying squad players. You've got to be saying, well, actually, we need to improve in every position because we haven't got anyone else. Wow.
It'll be a real gauge of the ambition of the ownership, the CEO. It'll be a case of, right, let's see really where you want this club to be.
But there is that sticky trap where you suddenly start, because we're in competition for players, and when it gets to that stage, then that's when you have to start offering more wages, and you suddenly fall into the same trap that all clubs are struggling with, and
desperately trying to hoover up anything that looks like a Premier League player, and then you realise you've got a load of shite.
And then if the mix isn't right, you get relegated, and then suddenly you're doing a Bolton or whatever, and become a crisis club, as we were very close to being.
Yep.
So it's going to be a very busy summer and a very interesting summer at that. But on the bright side, we do have the man that some people were wishing away or saying goodbye, Grealish. Mm. At least he is somebody who can galvanise the fans.
A genuine icon and idol for the first time in a long time.
Well, it's a proper talisman, isn't it?
Proper footballer.
Like a hero figure to root for, whether you're a kid or an adult. And also, bit of a poster boy as well to help this club grow globally.
Absolutely. I mean, because we've said that before, haven't we?
Yeah, it's been so parochial recently. I mean, if you haven't got a Brummie accent, you're kind of shouted down, speaking from experience. But that mentality's got to change, because with Liverpool, I mean, if you haven't got a Scouse accent, you know, that those days are long gone. Mm. It's the bigger picture. Same with Manchester United, Manchester City. It's Villa's going to transform and some people won't like it. I mean, but those days of, you know, tradition and ideology in football are long, long gone. And
we have to become a global team. And a global, you know, a global brand. And I hate using that words like
that.
We've got
to have global appeal. I think that the brand bit comes with it, doesn't it? That there's two ways of doing that. You can go the route of, I don't know, what Manchester City have tried to create. And what I don't think that they've built around their club yet is a fan base, to be honest. You know, there's a lot of empty seats. I don't think they've got that groundswell of, I don't know, not even the neutral or the casual overseas fan. I think that they migrate to other teams. And I think the problem with that, the issue that they've got, and it's something that a club like Villa can, to pick up on the points you've just been making, is that you can buy into a club like Villa and a player like Grealish, because there's actually a true, genuine story there. This is a local kid, and there's all the backstory with it. Whereas
but the same with Dean Smith, and you're right, you can sell that to overseas fans.
It's a story to buy
and
into.
I think, I think unlike someone like a City, who are always the example, City at one point would have been seen as the underdog, but because of how they've achieved their success, and they simply have bought it. Mm. You don't buy into City being, you know, the little brother of Man United anymore. You just think, well, this is this, you know,
Man City's not
sovereign wealth fund. It's just
Man City's not like sustainable. And it's why PSG aren't a big club. You know, you can't just throw hundreds of millions of pounds into and create. You know, Manchester City were a big football club before their, you know, wealthy owners came along. But you can't just suddenly become a super club. You know, that's a
Yeah.
You don't.
This comes.
You can't buy into
decades
that
club. It's decades of culture, you know, like Bayern Munich in Germany or Juve, AC Milan in Italy. Well,
you know, when you look at the list of European Cup winners recently, obviously, because we've just had the final, and you see Chelsea on there, and they bought. I mean, they got.
They were a small club
stage.
when I was a kid. Yeah. They didn't bring any fans.
And before Abramovich came along, they had got to the point where, you know, they could finish fourth or fifth or whatever. And they were challenging. They could win an FA Cup final against Villa in a very boring game. But there's no way they win that Champions League without Abramovich coming to town.
No.
And you look at that and it's like a stain on, I don't know, I still hate this idea in football where it's not equal. It's all, you know, you have such an advantage if you have a rich sugar daddy. I mean, we've got rich sugar daddies allegedly, but we'll see what happens.
You look at the it's a totally different era, but you look at the 80s when sort of Forest and Villa went up against Europe's, you know, real juggernauts stuck it to them and won. You don't see that happening. You know, the nearest we got recently was sort of Leicester winning the league and then having a little run in the Champions League, but it was never going to be a sustainable period of success for them.
Yeah, because they just lose their players, they get picked off.
And they lost their manager and the whole thing just sort of fell apart. I don't think people...
Well, they sacked their manager, they're idiots.
Yeah, and obviously Mahrez left. And
I think that's the, you know, for the good and exciting parts of the Premier League that I look forward to and I think are exciting. I think that that's the end of the scale where that you have inequality and you have, you know, this joke of financial fair play, which doesn't, it just doesn't apply at the top end for the top elite clubs. Yeah. So
in a nutshell, Villa going into the Premier League, I mean, as we've just highlighted, there is a big rebuilding job there, and it will help to get at least a couple of those loan players over the line just for some continuity. Mm. At the same time, if you can bed them in, and how realistic it is, I don't know. I mean, when Villa last got relegated, we got promoted. We, under Graham Taylor, we fannied around that season, just missed out on relegation, but we still had the similar kind of players and he was just kind of getting acclimatizing them really and adding a couple of pieces, and then next season we battled with Liverpool for the title and came second. So but there is a bit of a difference now. There is that kind of top four clubs which you can't get promoted now and expect to challenge for the title within a season or two, although Leicester obviously did that. So the question is, how quickly can we bed a team down? Because this league is not that great. You can finish mid-table if you've got a decent team.
Yeah.
If we'd gone up with a settled team and that was going to be the bedrock of what we were starting with, I would fancy us to finish top half. But because we're going to have to create half a team or buy half a first team. It's still an open question.
I mean, you look at what Wolves did, you know, when they went up, they were Premier League ready, yeah, and they added to it. Yeah. So they bought so well, you know, they bought the keeper, they bought superb players, and all of their, what you'd call their big name, stellar, you know, their sort of the big signings, they all worked. They didn't have big flops. Villa can't afford to have another window of flops. They have these signings that are going to come in this window and probably January as well, have to work.
Yeah,
you know, Wolves, for example, went out and bought Champions League captains in players like Neves and Caballero and is it Jimenez, the lad up front. You know, they bought quite real players of European pedigree. I mean, unfortunately, they are kind of the blueprint of how to, you know, to get it right. They nailed it.
I think this coming season will be the test for Wolves because it's a consolidation season. They've got into...
Also, the novelty is
novelty
gone.
Goes, and I think that there's a... How can I put this? I'm a big fan of the traditional European UEFA Cup format, but I think the Europa League style is a...
It can really hemorrhage your season, can't
well,
it?
I think
it really can hamstring you.
And I don't know...
Because you have to be built for it, don't you? You almost have to have two squads.
You have to have two squads, and I think that it's about appetite, and I think that as the shine gone off these competitions, the extent, and it's deeply sad to some, you know, I think I used to love the UEFA Cup when I was a kid growing up watching football, whether Villa were in or out of it. And now it's the extra games when actually, if truth be told, the true focus of clubs and probably players is the Premier League, and how much those extra games can hurt you in terms of fatigue and squad size. Burnley's a great example because, you know, I hear Wolves' fans going on about how great it is to be in Europe. You're not in the real Europe, and what impact that will have upon them next year. I'm intrigued to see, actually.
Yeah. So what you're saying, Villa are going to finish higher than Wolves?
We must. Well, I grew up in an eight. I think, how many years was it before I saw Villa play Wolves in the Premier League? You know, it was many, many years.
It was under O'Leary, wasn't it?
It was a long time. It was a long, long time. And I have to say that Wolves, we used to go to the Molyneux. I remember Angel scoring a hat-trick on their pitch, and it was. You know, they just weren't competition.
I mean, when I was younger, Wolves, the only time we ever played them, I think I remember playing them in a Coca-Cola Cup quarterfinal. Yeah. And the only other time was pre-season friendlies. Yeah. They were the warm-up act.
Yeah. And I think this, so to assert our authority, we have to, you know, I don't think they're the benchmark, but we need to get above them.
Indeed. Just wrapping up, Chota. I think we discussed this on the bonus podcast, and I think it's a no-brainer to get him if that swap deal is on and it's only going to cost a couple of million here and there, because he was in and out of the Blues squad. Mm. I mean, I always remember when we were prepping for Villa Blues, and you look at his five games before and he's on the bench for most of them. And then you look at his record at Brentford, where, what was it, 23 goals in 69 appearances, which for his position is pretty
piles
tasty.
Of assists as well.
Yeah. So I think definitely he's somebody who, because you're going to need a squad in the Premier League, and he's somebody that can bring something to the table that's a bit unexpected.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of what you're looking for. You know, you're looking for Villa to go and get some real quality players or a couple of signings that make you go, oh, wow, they're statements. But then you also need those sort of the savvy buys that for so long we haven't had. You know, McGinn season was a great example.
No one leapt at their chair when we bought McGinn, but, you know, what a signing he's proved to be.
Yeah.
And where Hotter plays, now he plays on the right-hand side. I don't know if Smith's necessarily bringing him and saying, you're the main man, you're going to start, but it is an area we need options in.
That impact as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But also, it's a matter, I mean, because he wasn't starting for the Blues, but it's a matter of, as we've discussed previously, Dean Smith, perhaps his style was always going to be better suited for the Premier League than the lower leagues, and that's why perhaps he struggled to finish higher with, you know, teams like Brentford and Warsaw, because you don't have the calibre of player at that level to essentially get the best out of the system that you actually want to use. I mean, we mentioned the fullbacks earlier on. His way of playing needs decent fullbacks.
It needs to be technically gifted players. You can't have, you know, 35, 36-year-olds who lack energy. You need a high-energy team with technical ability.
So Jota may flourish more under such systems in the Premier League rather than a more physical championship.
I think he'll see it as a huge opportunity and a big step up, not, you know, local rivalry aside, to go from sort of going through the motions. Going through the motions at a mid-table championship side to all of a sudden finding himself in the Premier League. I mean, Villa have come off far better.
Lower table championship team.
Yeah. Villa have come out of that deal so much better off, because, you know, in all, you know, with all due respect to the lad, Gary Gardner's been on the scrap heap at Villa For years.
With all due respect.
It is scrap. You are right, though. Who's got a career in football? I never know.
The FFP issues we'll discuss later, but I think when you're in the Premier League, doesn't matter what the EFL really say, you can tell them to get lost.
Fuck off. We're swimming but in our sea of money. Fuck you.
There's a fan consultation group meeting coming up with Villa CEO Christian Perslow, where top of that agenda will be to get him to explain and clarify for supporters the actual financial fair play situation and if they're doing any hocus pocus with Villa Park in terms of selling it and then leasing it back to ourselves.
$1 billion.
Hopefully he will come clean and actually give us what we need to know there.
I mean, that's one of the things, isn't it, going into next season, is just knowing we're out of the, you know, out of the shit, basically.
Mm. Rather than, you know, the daily fail and talk sport or whatever, just kind of regurgitating financial fair play BS just to because people will read it. Mm. I mean, we know that already. We are now back into the Premier League clickbait swamp as well, so that's going to be fun. I mean, the problem with all these aggregate sites, these Villa this and Villa that, is they just, without thinking about what they're spreading, they just spread it. So it's just the cycle continues and continues.
And unfortunately, this summer, you know, we don't have a World Cup or a major Euros. We're going to have essentially like a month at least of just absolutely nothing. And then all the pre-season stuff starts. It's great for Villa.
I think that's good for Villa in terms of rebuilding and everything, to do it in a summer when there is none of these distractions. And
the thing is, you can't negotiate anything with players who are away either. So
that's helped us. I think Perslow and Smith were working in the night the day after starting the process.
I had the feeling from what their interviews said that they clearly had two plans. You know, they were planning for the Championship, but they also knew, you know.
That's been Villa all since we've been relegated. We've been planning for both things, looking at both eventualities, whether it was under Wyness or Perslow. It's standard procedure, really, isn't it?
Standard procedures? Tony Shearer and Keith Wyness following standard procedures? Surely not.
Yeah.
Fraud.
So we will obviously have other shows in the summer of love, as we look towards the our reintroduction into the Premier League. Hopefully we won't burn out as we enter the Premier League atmosphere, and we will actually land with firm feet and
onto the face of Micah Richards.
Kick some ass in the early weeks of that. Yeah, Micah Richards was down there sitting on the bench, which I thought it was good that he actually fronted up, because it's, you know, it's easier if you've been injured for so long just to sit in the stands and not even turn up at all, but at least kind of feeling part of it, if you know what I mean. And even, you know, even for him, at least when he leaves the club, they're promoted. So thank you very much, Micah Richards, for the promotion.
Yeah. Oh, cheers. Yeah. What was it 27 appearances, a sum total of $385,000 a match he's cost us.
Yeah, but I mean, we can dwell on these things. But the thing is, we're now promoted, and he was bought for the reason to get promoted. Well, actually, he was bought
to keep us in the league. He fucking didn't. failed years ago.
Good point. But at least with this promotion, and he was timing with his disappearances, you can just wipe it clean and just concentrate on things rather than getting caught up. Because this is one of the problems. It's been this circle of toxicity where we've just been obsessed with these players on big wages because we weren't performing on the field. And now a lot of these players have come to the end of their time, and it's time to make some fresh mistakes on wages. And
yeah, we need new things to laugh at.
That's true.
Right, so until the next show, which hopefully will be when I have super fast broadband finally installed after I was disconnected after my new neighbour gave my address by mistake. I didn't know that internet companies can, via third parties, turn off your supply, but you learn something every day. So we will be back. We have a new microphone. Dan Rogers is...
live and uninterrupted from the dungeon.
Now you can hear him. You can hear him scream from the sex dungeon. Does it have a B postcode?
No. It's
Dan's SW, isn't he?
Even more sordid. And to make sure you are Premier League ready, please do follow the My Old Man Said podcast on Spotify. Subscribe on Apple and obviously any other podcast app that you use, as you will get the notification first. Also, join, if you want to get closer to the show, the Mad Few Facebook group, which I will normally push out on social media, so you get the link there. It's also in the show notes as well. And most of all, to help us march on into the Premier League, please do become a My Old Man Said patron. Go to myoldmansaid.com and click on the patron link. And also on the shop option, you can also buy a t-shirt to support the show too. Thank you very much. But until next time, thank God we are no longer Championship creatures. So we can say goodbye to the Championship, the EFL,
the Leeds. Goodbye to losing at Brentford every year.
That means we've automatically gained, well, 6 points potential back now. No more Blues. You know, Blues is good. It's that day out, but I think we've got bigger days out now.
No more Steve Bruce.
It's a bit tedious. No more Steve Bruce. We leave him to rot away in the Championship as well.
But the Mad Few remain.
They march on to Anfield, Old Trafford, the new White Hart Lane.
And West Ham's monstrosity.
Oh, yes, we get to visit the London Stadium. Joy, oh joy. But yeah, no, it's actually, interestingly, we've been out of the Premier League long enough for teams that we used to play to have new stadiums for when we return.
Thank God.
There's been progress. There's new trips to be had, new stadiums to visit. That was the only thing we could find that was good about the Championship. Oh, we get to visit some new stadiums. Now there's actually new stadiums legitimately in the Premier League. New stands
and
as well.
Thank God we don't have to go to Luton.
Oh. Yeah. And on that note, it's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
My old man said.
Dean Smith's last words as he boarded the coach back to Birmingham from the Hilton. I think I tweeted it actually, where he just said to it, I think he had a few shandies, old Dean. I love every fucking single one of you.
Good lad. Was that in between choruses of Sweet Caroline?
Days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.